Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to sort of do an overview of some of the things we've talked about with as it relates to self-regulation and talk about self-regulation throughout the lifespan.
Across the lifespan.
From birth, as we've from kind birth. Of talked about a little bit, right. All the way through adulthood into our later years of life.
Careful.
I'm being careful.
Later years. He has a lot of criticism about later years. Hey, I want to apologize for my sweater. It's kind of hard to... My brother said you shouldn't wear patterns when you're being videoed.
Mm-hmm.
Like you wear solid colors all
I
the
do.
Time, right?
I try to.
So I apologize for the sweater. It's cold in Florida this morning.
It is. Surprisingly.
Cold. On unseasonably cold.
March 9th. It's very cold out.
That's right. It got all the way into the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know if you live north of some states, 40s is good. It's spring break. But yeah. No, it should be warmer here. It is spring break for some schools starting next week. And we expect it to be warmer, right? But we have this little cold spell. For us, it's very cold. 40s is cold.
A friend of the podcast, she wrote in yesterday, and they were experiencing something called a brownout.
Oh, yes.
And I had never heard of a brownout. I had no idea what it was. I had to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know.
I remember those.
And I still don't know why it's called a brownout, because that doesn't make sense.
It's not
There's
a blackout.
Nothing brown.
It's not a blackout.
But blackout makes sense, because the lights are out, and so it's dark.
But not all the lights are out in a brownout.
But just because a few lights are on doesn't make it brown. We can see it's a dim out.
You had to live there.
It's dim.
To get it. There's a white out.
That's snow. That makes sense.
We had lots of those.
No, so I'm thinking, is the rain like really dirty or something, and so it's brown? Is the snow
in some cities it is?
Is the snow really dirty, so it's a brownout? I don't know.
Oh, dirty snow! Snow gets ugly in the spring.
I don't know. So I learned what a brownout is.
And for our friends in New England, sorry about your weather. They've really been hammered with these storms. They don't call them nor'easters. They call them there's a name for them.
I think that's what somebody told me yesterday. That's what they're having there's a nor'easter.
Nor'easter, but they have a new name for it. And I can't remember what it is. But
and so then I was making the joke that,
it's their version.
It's neither St. Patrick's Day nor Easter. It's cheesy.
What
cheesy
day is
dad
it
jokes.
Today?
Today is March 9th.
Right.
We're recording on March 9th. It'll go out on March 10th.
Right.
Were you marking the date of my bad dad joke?
Well, that left me a little weak.
I had no...
Easter's coming at the end of the month.
Yes.
And St. Patrick's Day is the 15th? March 15th? Something like that.
Something like that.
They celebrate that in Chicago, Pittsburgh, Savannah. Those are the big... St. Patrick's Day.
Boston.
And New York. New York and Boston.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Boston. So we're going to talk about self-regulation?
I was going to say, we're not here to talk about any of those things.
Well, we would be a non-exemplar, because you and I don't have self-regulation. We don't have self-regulation.
It's difficult.
No, people with ADHD struggle with self-regulation.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
So, but no, we do want to sort of, this would be the capstone experience, as it were, of this week's podcast on self-regulation.
Right.
Okay. And interestingly, this writer for today's article, and you've posted this, of course.
Yeah, it's in the show notes.
And
it's Christine Burnett.
Right.
Christy Burnett.
Right. And she's the editor of this publication, and the article of this one thing could be more important than reading writing. And you remember Paul Tough.
Right.
Talks about this in his book, How Children Succeed, is that it's not the academic skills. Paul Tough's work is based on a Nobel Prize-winning economist who did a study of early children who experienced these preschool programs, the Perry preschool program, and how they turned out later. And it was not their academic skills that were better.
Mm-hmm.
It was all those personal characterological things that got better. And one of those is the ability to regulate, to self-regulate.
Right.
Right. So we spent a week talking about it, and now we're going to summarize it today.
Yeah. So the remember we talked before about the fact that while we tend to think of self-regulation as a skill, it's actually a process.
Right.
It's the process by which we sort of assess what's going on around us. We kind of evaluate what is expected of us, and then we engage in an action that hopefully will meet the expectations, and then we evaluate afterwards to determine whether or not we did a good job.
Right. It's a good distinction, because many people think of it as a skill, and it isn't. It's much broader. It's defined more broadly than a skill.
Right. Yeah, the skill involved here would be impulse control, for example. That's so if you assess the a situation and you are inside in a classroom, and the expectation is that you're going to have calm voices or that you're going to sit quietly, if you don't have, if your self-regulation skills are poor, you're not assessing perhaps that that environment well, and so you speak loudly, and so you say, okay, you have poor self-regulation skills. The trigger for that, the root of that, may be impulsivity, or it could be emotional inflexibility.
Right.
It could be a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So, but it kind of falls within that, how it affects the process of self-regulation.
Right. And the other part of that is that you may not be able to adjust to the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, that you read the situation accurately, but you simply don't have the wherewithal. The ability to regulate your emotions to match the situation.
Right. So. You know, one of the things that we've talked about before that I think is important here as well is the fact that there's a difference between recognizing the expectations of a particular setting or environment and being able to implement or act upon that knowledge.
Right.
You know, knowing right from wrong is different from being able to make decisions based upon what's right and wrong.
Right. Very different.
Those are two very different things.
Yeah, kids with ADHD will tell you all the time, no, I knew I wasn't supposed to do it, but I forgot. Mm-hmm. And they do forget. Mm-hmm. Or if they don't forget, it doesn't even enter their minds, actually. It's not that they forgot.
Not at the time. Afterwards.
Right. Afterwards, they say, yes, I know, you've told me 1,000 times, but I forgot. And they do. Mm-hmm. They do forget. So the wherewithal is different. The other thing about self-regulation is it's all about... most of what you read about self-regulation, it's goal achievement. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to regulate yourself to achieve your goals.
Right.
And you can see this in school-age children. Children who can't self-regulate have a very difficult time accomplishing very much. You know, to be able to sit down and do an assignment, for example, if that's the goal. If you can't self-regulate, you can't achieve that goal. So it's goal setting and goal achievement is at the basis of self-regulation.
And it's goal... process, it's the process of goal setting and achievement in a very broad sense.
In the broadest sense.
You know, we're not talking about I want to be a doctor when I grow up, not those kind of goals. It's goals like I want to, you know, learn from this math lesson today. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to complete this worksheet.
Right.
Those kinds of things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So self-regulation begins early in life. We talked about that earlier this week, that, you know, it starts in infancy.
Right.
And we talked about the importance of helping your child by giving them, your infant, by giving him or her the opportunity to learn to self-regulate, you know, to calm him or herself down, to relax, to soothe themselves back to sleep, you know, if they wake up. And so that starts early in life.
Right. The most important thing, and we didn't realize this for a long time, it's been about the last 20 years that psychologists have been talking about self-regulation. Prior to that, there wasn't much written about self-regulation. It was mostly you're controlled by your environment, either by teachers or parents or some conditions in the environment. It's only been until more recently that we've been talking about self-regulation. But it really does begin in infancy because, as we say in our book, in our handbook, one of the most important thing an infant does is to sleep.
Right.
They sleep about 22 hours a day. And one of the most important, one of the things that we need to do is we need to give our infants the opportunity to learn how to self-soothe. Mm-hmm. Because if the parent is doing all the soothing, and then you lay the baby down in the crib after she's asleep, if you're doing all the soothing and the emotional regulation and you never give the child a chance to learn how to self-regulate, they're never going to self-regulate. Right. It doesn't happen automatically. Mm-hmm. Children have to, it's not that you have to teach it, but you have to put them into situations where they learn it. Mm-hmm. And so that begins in infancy. And you have to let the child sort of cry it out for a little while, because that's how they learn how to calm themselves.
Right.
Whether it's a pacifier, their thumb, or crying, however they do it. Now, that said, some children are better at this than others. Right. Some infants are better at this than others. And that depends on their basic temperament.
Right.
So everything that we say about self-regulation is also related to a person's basic temperament.
Right.
If your baby has an easy temperament, we have people come in all the time and they'll say, oh no, she's been sleeping since she was a mm-hmm. few days old. And other parents say, I just can't get her to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
That could be differences in temperament. So you have to recognize your child's temperament. But you have to give children a chance to learn how to calm themselves.
Right.
Begins in infancy.
Yeah, and it's not that we buy into that. What is it, the Berber method?
Berber.
Of letting them cry it out, where you lay them down. If they start crying, you sit outside the door and listen to them cry for however long
minutes.
It takes them.
Right.
Instead, you let them, experience mm-hmm. it for a few minutes to see if they can calm themselves down. And if they can't, then you provide some support.
Yeah, if it escalates, if the crying gets louder and more intensive, then you have to step in, and because there could be something else wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But give it a few minutes, mm-hmm. and let them learn how to calm themselves. You get to know your infant. Just stand outside the door.
Yeah.
You'll get to know your infant's rhythms.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So, and then as the child gets older, then we start talking about different boundaries and expectations that are placed on the child. And so, mm-hmm. We want them to be able to learn self-regulation skills to decrease temper tantrums and things like that, for example.
Yeah, because at about age 2.5, mm-hmm. the child goes through this major change, mm-hmm. okay? And so they become more independent, they start to say no, they begin to resist their parents a little bit. So this is a time where they have increased abilities, but parents now have to set some of the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the important things with toddlers, is parents set the boundaries. But also, you have to give your children the opportunity to explore, mm-hmm. to make mistakes, to fall down, to get dirty. Cuts and bruises and scrapes are a normal part of it. You learn how to regulate those emotions during those toddler or preschool years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all with the goal of getting them ready
For school. And the other big thing that happens, besides setting boundaries, is you have to talk to your children.
Right.
Because what kids do is parents will say, no, 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 that's a bad choice. No, mm-hmm. no, no, don't touch. No, 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 no hitting.
Right.
Parents say those words to kids, and you'll hear young children, age 2 or 3 or even 4, repeat those.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be playing with other kids, and they'll say, no, 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 no hitting. No, 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 you're going to go to timeout. Well, eventually that spoken speech
mm-hmm.
becomes inner speech. Mm-hmm. And that's what they use to regulate their behavior. Yeah. So it's very important for parents to be saying those phrases to kids, because those are the phrases they're going to internalize, and they'll say, no, 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 don't do that. And then they can self-regulate by relying on that inner speech.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so again, so they do all this to get ready for mm-hmm.
Kindergarten, right.
And then once kindergarten happens, the importance of self-regulation there, we're starting to develop, that sense of social play and social interactions, and the fact that, other grown-ups, other big people are going mm-hmm. to tell you what to do and to be able to handle these rules and variations in expectations from one setting to another setting. That requires a great deal of self-regulation.
And to do what you're told.
Yeah.
By age 5, there shouldn't be any more temper tantrums.
Right.
Kids should have that under control. So mm-hmm. no more temper tantrums. Those were things that they did at 2, 3, 4. No more temper tantrums. They're playing with others. They clean up their own messes. But they're also under stimulus control.
Mm-hmm.
And by stimulus control, we mean when the teacher says it's time to stop and clean up,
mm-hmm.
that they comply with those wishes. Children who don't comply are going to run into serious difficulties, right, even as early as kindergarten or preschool.
Right.
So it's important that kids are, by age five, are under stimulus control, because they're going to be expected to do what they're told.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we see those kids who aren't.
Right.
And they have a lot of difficulties.
And that's what she means when she says it's more important than the academics, because many parents might feel, well, my child's expressing her creativity, or my child, you know, she just needs this or he needs that. It's really important for parents to understand mm-hmm. how important stimulus control is.
Absolutely.
Because when you're in that environment, teachers can't make those individual considerations.
Mm-hmm.
If it's time to go to lunch, you have to close up and go to lunch,
right,
because the teacher can't leave you in the room by yourself.
Right.
So it's really, really important that kids develop that that ability to listen to instructions and comply.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, as we get older, you know, we have had sort of infancy, mm-hmm. toddlerhood, start of kindergarten.
Right.
Now the next big step is in about third grade or so, age eight.
Third grade. Because that big brain growth that happened at about age 2.5 lasts until about 8. And
mm-hmm.
that's why we have that,
right,
that cutoff at 8. Because by then, all the neurons that you're going to keep, you have, and they're all connected to each other, and
mm-hmm.
that process takes about 6 years. So by right. about the end of the eighth year, the end of third grade, or the summer between third and fourth grade, that process comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, again, we have these mile markers
mm-hmm.
that should have been achieved by age eight.
Right. And by then we hope for, you know, good emotional control,
right,
that they're starting to be able to take some responsibility mm-hmm. for their belongings and their
right.
things. And so they are really well on their way,
mm-hmm.
You know, as far as being a little bit more self-reliant.
Self-reliant, exactly. And that by the end of third grade, kids should be, they should be able to manage most of their schooling. They should know where their books are
mm-hmm.
and know what their homework assignments are and how to get their homework back to school.
Mm-hmm.
That really should be achieved by the third grade.
Yeah.
By the end of third grade.
Yeah. They may still need some help.
Right, right.
But by and large, they should be able to handle it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have adolescence.
When, right.
you know, as we get into middle school and puberty hits, basically.
Wow. Game changer.
We go back to toddlerhood,
right.
in many ways, because a lot of the same types of brain changes that happen when you're two happen again when you're in middle school, when you hit puberty.
Right. Yeah, because by the time you get to age 10, 11, 12,
mm-hmm.
you get the immediate pre-pubertal ages and the onset of
right.
puberty itself. Now you enter another whole
right.
phase of development, And it's a little bit difficult because of the massive changes that are occurring in a teenager's brain. But the main thing we have to watch out for is that, again, we have to set up boundaries
mm-hmm.
because just like the two-year-olds, they had increased abilities and they wanted to use them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These kids have increased abilities and they want to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to set up some limits and some boundaries. That's important. But also, this is a period where kids are going to experiment, and
mm-hmm.
they are going to have some attitude, and
right.
these things are bound to occur. But they're normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you don't need to fuss too much about it,
right?
Because it's normal. Some kids, the wheels will fall off.
Yeah.
For most teenagers, about 80% of teenagers go through the teenage years, and it's uneventful. I mean, they do what
yeah.
they're told, and they keep
for
working.
For the most part, yeah.
Right. I mean, our kids essentially did. They,
mm-hmm.
they kind of went through kindergarten. They had some difficulties here and there, and bumps and bruises,
mm-hmm.
but nothing serious. 20% of teens could experience difficulties, and 10% will have real trouble.
Yeah.
Okay? But by and large, most teenagers are going to get through it. What parents have to do at this point is they really need to start backing out of their kids' lives.
Right.
The mistake that many parents, when we talk about helicopter parents, this is when I begin to worry about helicopter
right.
parents. Prior to that, we do want attachment parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Your kids need to know that you're beside
yeah.
them, that you're backing them up, that you're there to help and support them. By the time they get to middle school, your job is just about finished.
Right.
And you should be able to back out.
Right.
And if you can't, you need to start doing so.
Right.
This is when helicopter parenting becomes a problem.
Right.
Because your kids are going to keep relying on you rather than develop their own skills.
Right. And that's not to say that your kid won't need your help, your teen won't need your help, right, because you still need to stand up for them and advocate for them, mm-hmm, and help them. But yeah, they should be able to take the reins and be able to handle much of this on their own.
Especially their schoolwork, you know, their homework and all those assignments. I mean, they should be independent by this point.
Right, because I think that there's a pretty strong relationship between not doing those things,
right,
not being self-sufficient, not being able to take care of those things on their own, and the failure to launch.
Absolutely, yeah. Because remember, by age 18, they should be able to walk out of your house. I mean, legally, they're going to be considered adults.
Right.
Okay. The legal system is going to consider them adults. Mm-hmm. And so by age 18, they should be either going to college or going to work.
Right.
Some get married. They should be functioning as adults.
Right.
Again, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, it doesn't happen automatically. Mm-hmm. You have to give them opportunities.
Right.
And if your children are going to fail, if they're going to fall short, the time to fall short is middle school.
Right.
The earliest time to fall short is elementary school.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
If not elementary school, then middle school. Mm-hmm. If not middle school, high school. So if your kids are going to fall short or fail, now's the time to do it.
Yeah.
Don't wait. Don't support them and do the work for them, and then wait till they get to college. Because if they fail in college, it counts.
Right.
The grades never go, your grade point average never changes, because those grades are going to be following you for the rest of your life. Your high school grades don't.
Right.
So give your children an opportunity to learn to do this on their own.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, this article has some great resources in it.
It does. Yeah.
So before we kind of start talking about adults a little bit, wanted to mention that it has some great resources in it, including some activities on how to build some, self-regulation and self-confidence. And so I would definitely check that out, because it's really good stuff.
Right. The links are good. They go to good places. And there's a lot of really useful information when you click on those links. So she's done a really good job of collecting a lot of valuable information.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, so as a person graduates high school and enters into adulthood, I think it's... Well, I suppose what I want to mention here is that it's a fascinating phenomenon that we think happens at the age of 18, at the 18th birthday.
Yeah.
For some reason, the way that our society kind of works is that you go to bed 17 years old, 11 months, and 30 days.
23 and a half hours.
You wake up an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Fully functioning, responsible adult. And obviously, biology doesn't work that way. Development doesn't work that way.
Right.
You don't go to bed a child and wake up an adult.
Unless you're Tom Hanks.
And
the movie is Big.
Well, he was an adult physically, but he wasn't
but not
psychologically.
Right.
So it's important that we recognize that, first off. I've heard a lot of people now with all of the, not that we're going to get back on this topic again, but all the talk about gun control and all that kind of stuff, and the arguments about whether or not 18-year-olds should be legally able to purchase different forms of weapons, different types of weapons. And I've heard interesting, somewhat valid arguments on both sides.
Right.
It's an interesting... debate. From a neuropsychological perspective, however, it's pretty clear. The difference between an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old is not much difference than the difference between a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Right.
It doesn't, there's not something magical that happens. The brain is still in this curve of development.
Right.
And it's, we know from the research, but the brain continues to develop until mid to late 20s.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and this is especially salient for the areas of the brain that are important for self-regulation, which is the frontal lobes, the prefrontal cortex, and the neocortex here in the frontal areas of our brain. Mm-hmm. It continues to develop into the mid to late 20s. And so we see this ongoing ability, to self-regulate and mm-hmm. to control mm-hmm. and to make decisions, that it continues to improve over those years.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So self-regulation continues to develop into early adulthood.
That's right. And one of the things that everybody has to remember, parents, teachers, legal authorities, is that the self-regulatory functions are mediated, controlled by the frontal lobe of the brain,
mm-hmm.
and it's not mature yet.
Right.
What are mature are all the structures that produce emotions.
Right.
They're working just fine.
You're 2 years old.
Right. So you have the emotional structures of the brain have already developed, and they're mm-hmm. working at full capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the inhibitory mechanisms, the self-regulatory mechanisms, haven't caught up and right. won't until you're in your 20s.
Right.
Mid to late 20s, especially for males.
Right.
Girls, it might, females, it might happen earlier. But you have to, there's this biological component
mm-hmm.
to self-regulation,
yeah.
and it just doesn't mature until that time. That's why teenagers do the silly stuff that they do,
mm-hmm.
because they get the emotional urge to do it,
right.
but they don't have the inhibition to say, whoa, wait a minute, that's not a very good idea.
Right.
It's a very good idea. Mm-hmm. And they go and do it.
Right.
And then later they think, wow, that was kind of stupid.
Right.
But that's kind of stupid doesn't happen until after.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have that that development that continues.
Right.
And now the difference between human development through the adult years mm-hmm. and the human development through childhood,
right.
you know, birth to 18, mm-hmm. mid-20s or so, is that we continue to develop, we continue to change over time, but the change is a little bit more gradual. You know, we talk about major differences happening from mm-hmm. between birth and two and five and eight
right.
and
huge differences.
Those are right. massive changes.
Right.
Yeah, the changes.
We talk about that, you know, the difference between a little league pitcher who's 12
mm-hmm.
and a college pitcher, well, or a professional, Dwight Gooden,
mm-hmm.
pitched in the major leagues at 18.
Right.
Okay, so just in that, just a massive change
right.
that occurs between 12 and 18.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very
huge,
different, very
right.
different. And so, and especially so in males.
Right.
You know, right. I was talking to a college recruiter for sports, for soccer mm-hmm. specifically, and he said that that he can go to he'll go to high schools and he'll look at female players as even as young as freshman, ninth or tenth
right.
grade.
Right.
But for boys, he doesn't look until at least the junior year, if not just the senior year,
because of maturity.
Right. He says that what you see for a female in ninth or tenth grade, that's pretty much what you're going to get when they're 18 and entering college, athletically.
Yeah.
But for males, it's not until much later.
Wow.
So
I didn't know that.
So it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. But in adulthood, the changes happen much more gradual.
Right.
And so, you know, we have this ongoing, you know, brain development that continues into the mid-20s. But the next big thing that really happens, and this is more of a social-emotional type of construct, and we think of things like the midlife crisis.
Right.
You know, and we have people who start making these really strange decisions, and they start, you know, going out and buying sports cars, and they start dressing differently, and they,
right.
you know, they start, you know, dyeing their hair differently or whatever. And we think we tend to relate this to self-regulation to some extent, because I always think of the was either not Parenthood, I think it was Father of the Bride. When Steve Martin, you know, who has had white hair since he was
right.
in his 20s,
right.
His character in that movie was going through somewhat of a midlife crisis, and it was Father of the Bride, and he dyes it jet black. It's like, what? Where did that come from? But he was, you know, he wanted to look younger. He wanted to. So we think of self-regulation during that time because we have these sort of somewhat impulsive decisions and we have these unusual behaviors.
Right. For those of you who haven't, whether you're a man or a woman,
mm-hmm.
for those of you who haven't experienced a midlife crisis yet, it's like a second adolescence.
Right.
It's just this tumult,
mm-hmm.
this that happens. Like you say, people go out and buy sports cars or motorcycles, or they, you know, develop a bucket list and mm-hmm. themselves. If you've been through it, come and tell us about it, because it's a funny experience. It's a common experience. Mm-hmm. Those who have been through it compare notes and right. say, "Yeah, I felt this, and I thought this, mm-hmm. and this is the way it made me feel." And so it's a common experience.
Right.
You'll all make it through it, mm-hmm. but don't do anything too rash, because you're going to get through this phase, mm-hmm. and you might regret some of the decisions you made. When I was years ago, I was working, and a guy bought a truck with a camper, you know, mm-hmm. and his wife would joke about it. Said, "That's his sports car, you know, yeah. this old dilapidated truck." He always wanted a little pickup truck, mm-hmm. and got it during his midlife crisis.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you'll do nothing more than buy a dilapidated pickup truck.
Yeah, yeah, but that change is more emotional than biological,
exactly.
isn't it? There's not.
Yeah,
there's not a whole lot of massive changes that's happening in the brain at that time.
Unless you're an elite athlete.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
If you start to notice differences, Tom Brady being mm-hmm. one of the rare exceptions. Nolan Ryan, who
right.
was able to pitch at that level into his 40s.
But you think of people who you can see that massive drop off, like Brett Favre.
Exactly.
You know, he was a fantastic player, mm-hmm. had a great season. It's like, you know what, let's do it one more.
Right.
And then that last year was, what happened?
Couldn't do it. Right.
You know, because things begin to drop off.
In
like
your
that.
40s, those physical abilities begin to, no matter how hard you work or what you do, they
right.
begin to decline.
And that's more of what it is, even right. more so than neurological.
It's neurologically, it's the same.
Physiological,
yeah,
because your muscles don't repair as mm-hmm. fast. You don't recover from strenuous activities as fast. So it's very much so a physical thing. And those physical traits are likely to trigger some of those right. emotional reactions.
That's right. I can't do it anymore.
Right.
You know, some people have a really hard time with that.
Exactly. Exactly. So the midlife crisis is related to self-regulation mm-hmm. issues.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike, you know, previous you know, influencers being more biological. Mm-hmm. This one is very much so
very emotional. Social emotional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The last, I guess,
phase.
Of self-regulation, right, is in later years,
right,
when we begin to have some of that cognitive decline,
right,
mm-hmm. and we're in essence going. It's like we're going back to those
it's
earlier
not like
years.
We're going back.
Yeah.
We are going back.
Yeah.
You know, you're born without hair, you're going to die without hair. You're in a diaper when you're little, you're in a diaper when you're old. You know? I mean, let's face it. So, unless you stay in shape, right?
I don't know. I feel like I'm like, it's like a bad Hallmark card. It's like...
No, it's
lordy, true. Lordy, look who's
40. No, there is this decline, because when we talk about self-regulation, we're talking about three components.
Mm-hmm.
There's a behavioral component.
Right.
Can you control your behavior? That's what kids mm-hmm. have trouble with. There's an emotional component.
Right.
But there's also a cognitive component.
Right.
Because if you're self-regulating,
mm-hmm.
it's because you are thinking, you have motivation, you have goals. Those are all cognitive abilities.
Right.
You said at the beginning of the podcast that it's not a skill, it's a process.
Right.
And it consists of many skills mm-hmm. that combine into a process.
Right.
And so if in later years you begin to suffer cognitive declines,
right.
which are different than dementia,
mm-hmm.
which is different than Alzheimer's. I mean, mm-hmm. Alzheimer's is a type of dementia.
Right.
But cognitive decline is different from dementia.
Right.
Okay. And so if in your later years you begin to suffer cognitive declines, it's going to affect your self-regulation.
Right.
It's bound to, because right. cognition is part of self-regulation.
Yeah, and maybe it's easy to think of it this way. You know, the way that your brain develops, your brain develops inside out, right?
Yes.
The right. core part of your brain develops first, because that's what
right.
makes
mm-hmm.
helps you breathe and makes your heart beat and all that kind of stuff. And then as you develop, it kind of grows,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the part just outside of those critical living things right. are the areas of your brain that are for survival. Mm-hmm. So that's the emotional stuff,
right?
Fight or flight and all that business, or memory. That's right. Mm-hmm. And then it continues to grow, and then you get all the neocortex stuff. So you have the decision making, the impulse control, and all that kind of stuff.
You can read and do math, which is not nearly as important to staying alive.
Correct.
So the important things are deeper inside, and they develop first.
Right. So as the brain develops out, that's when you are sort of at your peak. Right. That's your mm-hmm. maximum. As we get older, and we start to have some of that decline, it sort of goes in reverse.
Right.
And so we start to lose some of those higher order executive functions,
right.
those higher order
it's
thinking. So while the internal stuff, the emotions and the survival things are still intact because some of that deterioration.
You can still get angry.
Right.
Now you don't know who you're angry with.
Right.
Or why you're angry. You're just angry.
And we have people who report that all the time. When they have loved ones with Alzheimer's or dementia or something, different forms of dementia, because they'll say, it's acting so out of character. He's getting so angry. And it's because those core emotional areas are still intact.
They're still
but
working.
He doesn't have the cortex to regulate those emotions to keep himself in check.
It's what we saw with young kids,
right.
You know, where they have these, or like teenagers, they have these big emotions,
right.
but they can't inhibit.
Right.
And that's what happens. It's not that they get mean.
Right.
It's that they can't inhibit those strong emotions. And
right.
and the article talks about big emotions,
right.
okay, the control of big emotions. And in the old, especially the old, you lose that ability to inhibit.
Right.
You know, you can't, you still have the emotional urges, but you don't inhibit.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it grows out and then it
comes back
in. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we see self-regulation issues again
in
the elderly. Mm-hmm. But as we, you know, in much the same way that the brain develops, self-regulation develops the same way over the years. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger, and then it gets weaker and weaker and weaker.
Right. Yep.
And so we that's how we see that sort of curve.
It's a normal curve
in development.
We
see
that Gaussian distribution of,
right.
you know, gradually it builds, reaches asymptote, and comes back down. What did I say?
You're using fancy words. Well, Gaussian?
Gaussian. You know, Gauss.
The asymptote. I do like that word, though. Asymptote. There's a P in there. I know. I like those words.
He's having a midlife crisis or something. I don't know.
You go buy a dilapidated truck.
Go buy an old, banged up truck.
So, you're self-regulation. All right. Were we going to do anything? Talk about anything else today? Because we kind of covered it through the lifespan.
But if
it's
you're
always important,
but it's good that we're thinking of lifespan because if you're a parent of any age child, your obligation is to give that child an opportunity to learn how to self-regulate.
Well,
that's
the
best
sandwich
thing.
Generation,
right?
The sandwich generation. You're raising your children,
right?
And you're dealing with your elderly parents, and so you're going to be dealing with self-regulation issues here. And you're going to be dealing with self-regulations there.
That's right. Yeah. And if you're in the middle, you have the obligation to keep yourself under control. Because if you're a parent or a supervisor or a boss, now you have the responsibility to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want your children to self-regulate, you have to demonstrate self-regulation. If you're having temper tantrums and throwing things every time something goes wrong, that's what your children are going to learn. So in the middle years, in this peak,
Gaussian.
I won't call it asymptote, in this middle, the large middle section, then you have other obligations.
Right.
So it is a lifespan consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. As you were talking about that, it made me think of the discussion we had before we started recording in regards to decisions that schools and administration. We're not talking about that now. Settle. Breathe.
I'm going to self-regulate.
But I think that might be something we talk about next week. I've been thinking about things.
Yeah, maybe that is a good idea. Because what we're seeing is, as a result, in part, as a result of the Parkland shooting, we have decisions being made.
Yeah.
And people are rushing to make decisions to do something. And sometimes the decisions are not reasoned
right.
and thought out carefully.
They're not applying good self-regulation.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thinking, cognitive part.
Right.
So, all right. Okay. That's it for today, though. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.